Welcome to the Tri-Town Advice Givers Podcast, a podcast dedicated to bringing the Tri-Town and surrounding area residents the best advice from our brightest minds. My name is Mark Borst, your host, and today we are in the Tri-Town Advice Givers studio in St. John, Indiana, with Rick Peltier of the Franciscan Health Foundation. Good morning, Rick. Welcome to the show.
Mark, thank you so much. Great to be here and appreciate this opportunity.
Yeah, thank you. So I just always start off every episode. Tell me a little bit about you before we dive into the business side of things.
Exactly. Originally from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, actually a small suburb, but if I said that, most people wouldn't know what I mean, so I say Pittsburgh. So as you could probably guess, big Steelers, Penguins, and Pirates fan. Please don't hold that against me here in this area because I do. I love all sports. Yeah. So I love what the Cubs have done for this area. You know, I know the Sox have won a series in the past, and the Bears actually beat the Steelers this year. So I was hearing some of my new buddies there. Up here. Yeah, rubbing it in. But I tell you that only because like anybody who's loyal to their area, always will be loyal to my hometown teams. But I'll tell you. So being from Pittsburgh, but I've been a Hoosier transplant since 2000, okay. Moved to Evansville, Indiana in 2000, and have been in Indiana ever since. And for the past 17 years, worked in Evansville and then moved to the Crown Point, Indiana area, if you will, the region, as I was told it's called. And I love it. I love the diversity and all the different areas and towns up here. I became here in August of 2017 to work for Franciscan Health and oversee our foundation and basically our philanthropic efforts in the northern Indiana, northwestern Indiana region. But went to school at Syracuse University for broadcast journalism. So I was in the TV sportscasting business for 10 years and then kind of saw the light and saw that it's, at least for me, it's a little more glamorous on the outside than the inside. And as my wife and I first started, wife now, obviously, girlfriend and fiance at the time started dating, met her in Evansville, and realized, I want to start a family. Most of the times you work in sports are nights and weekends. That's when the sporting events are, obviously. And I realized, I think it's time for a change. So long story short, found a healthcare institution in Evansville, St. Mary's. And then that's when I really fell in love with the way Catholic healthcare is delivered, found our foundation there. As I did PR for 2 years from the transition and realized how much I love to help raise funds, especially for those in need, for the poor and the vulnerable. And that's what brought me to here for this opportunity.
Cool. Awesome. That's a great lead-in. So the Franciscan Health Foundation, tell us a little bit about that. Is that a new branch of the organization or kind of go into that?
Absolutely. That's a great question, Mark, because it's fairly new. So if a lot of people don't know about it, that's okay. We're 5 years old, about five, going on to year six. And that is a fairly new entity, if you will, of Franciscan Health, because we're all here to serve the mission. That's to continue Christ's ministry in our Franciscan tradition. And what we do is, as the foundation, we're the philanthropic arm of Franciscan Health. So now, was there fundraising done in the past? Yes, there was. There wasn't an actual foundation, 501c3, nonprofit status, obviously, until 5 years ago. So the foundation has been great. It's been improving. It's been growing. Not to use a pun here, but the foundation has been laid, and now it's my job to and my team to hopefully take that to a new level. And what I mean by that is obviously the more philanthropic revenue we can generate, the more patients we can help, the better impact we can have on this community.
That's great. So you said you took over in August?
Correct, August of 2017, yeah.
But you were doing this exact same thing at your other previous down in Evansville?
Correct, yeah. Okay. St. Mary's, which then became part of the St. Vincent statewide network, which is based out of Indianapolis. And Franciscan Health, we have hospital and healthcare systems and foundation in Indy as well. It's basically four divisions. So I oversee the Northwestern Indiana Division, Crown Point. We have facilities in Crown Point, hospitals, I should say, because there are outpatient facilities all throughout the region, but hospitals in Crown Point, Dyer, Hammond, Munster, Michigan City. So it's a big region, big area. But, as you get to know more people in the region, as you know, the big region becomes smaller communities and you get to know more people and all of a sudden it doesn't seem as big. And if anything I can stress today is the way we do our philanthropic work at Franciscan, and I'm not saying we're perfect, but I truly believe that we do fundraising the right way. And what I mean by that is we build relationships first. The money will come later, hopefully. But you have to get to know people first. You have to get to know what their philanthropic interests are, what their passions are. And I always tell people, you know, yes, of course we have needs at Franciscan, but my job and my team's job is to make their wishes, the donors' wishes, our supporters, you know, come true, really. And I say, forget what Franciscan needs. What difference do you want to make? What do you care about that we do? And then we try to match their passion with ways that can help us advance our mission. And that way, honestly, people say, I can't believe you asked for money. I couldn't do that. I said, I really don't ask for money. I build relationships. We find out what people care about. And we present opportunities to make a difference. There's never any pressure with us, but we stress the impact that they'll make, and especially the transformational impact they'll make on our community if they decide to make a philanthropic gift.
So just kind of to kind of the funding of the hospital, and how does all that work, and how does the philanthropy play into that? Like, what does it go towards? And just kind of go into that side of it.
Absolutely. We have several different funds. And the reason why is because, you know, anybody can restrict their gift to whatever difference they want to make. For example, I'll name some of the most popular funds, if you will, the Patient Assistance Fund, which I love. And that helps, again, the poor and the vulnerable. And a lot of people don't know about this, that we help with medications, food, clothing, even transportation. You know, we're doing something right now, working on a project in the Crown Point area, but we want to do it throughout the entire region, of course, is try to start or maybe even look into outsourcing our own patient transportation program, because in our research, we found out the third biggest barrier to healthcare access in the country is transportation. And we both know that, Mark. You know, you and I don't have to be rocket scientists, right, to figure out the reason why is because if people can't get to their appointment, they can't get the care. It's amazing that we as Americans sometimes tend to overlook that. Well, we're not doing that at Franciscan. We know and we've identified this as a serious issue, so we want to try to start a transportation program to make it easy for our patients to get to their appointments. That could be one of the funds that helps patients in need. We also help our employees in need. We all know that maybe today we're doing okay, right? But life with its uncertainties, maybe a spouse gets laid off unexpectedly, and all of a sudden the monthly bills become a little harder to pay, or maybe there's an accident or unforeseen, of course, health situation that you need help with, and we help our fellow employees in need with the Employee Assistance Fund. And the biggest thing really that I can say is 100% of what anybody directs their money to goes to that particular reason or restriction. The reason why I say that is, you know, and the truth about nonprofits is, you know, some nonprofits have to fundraise to keep the lights on, as we say, where you're fundraising for your salaries and for all your expenses, you know, and really when it comes to that, those unrestricted funds, a lot of places, a lot of nonprofits have to do that. The Franciscan sisters and those leaders in corporate, I cannot thank them enough because they understand the importance of philanthropy and they cover our salaries, they cover all of our expenses. So guess what? We're not fundraising for our salaries for any expenses. 100% we can say with confidence, and boy, does that make my job, my team's job a lot easier too and a lot more fun. And we can tell people 100% of what we do and what you say your gift is going to do, it goes right to that need. 100%. It's awesome.
It's definitely rare where 100% has passed through.
Right. And that's why I say, you know, where I came from in Evansville, you know, a lot of the unrestricted money had to be used for expenses and salaries. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing because you got to keep the lights on, right, sure, to run your nonprofit and to run your mission and your ministry. But we don't have to worry about that here at Franciscan. Yeah.
So Franciscan owns all the hospitals in the region now, is that right?
Well, with our hospitals in Crown Point, Dyer, Hammond, Munster, and in Michigan City, correct. With those five hospitals, then we have outpatient facilities and different, you know, specialists, you know, pediatrics and different pediatricians, right, and different, you know, I couldn't begin to tell you as I'm still learning how many facilities we have, but I know we have a nice blanket coverage.
The community is in the family now too, right?
No, they're not. No, community is separate and Methodist is separate as well. Yeah, they have their own separate healthcare facilities, correct. Okay.
So what's the Munster location?
Yeah, Munster location is along Calumet, and we also and we're recently built a new cancer center there as well, mm-hmm, which to obviously take care of the growing, you know, oncology needs in the area, and cancer is one of the biggest service line areas for all healthcare institutions, will tell you that. And so we're dedicated to a new state-of-the-art cancer facility, which is opening right in front of our Munster Hospital. It'll open this summer. We're excited about that.
Okay. So is part of the philanthropy the building capital campaigns too, or is it more towards the other services?
You know, there are capital campaigns. Great question. When the St. Clair Clinic was started in Crown Point years ago, there was a capital campaign to start that. The Munster Cancer Center was all built on capital from Franciscan, and we were not asked to raise any funds for that. Are there donor opportunities within the facility for naming rights? We're still exploring that, so there could be. The New Michigan City Hospital that's going up right on 80, beautiful. It's right at the entrance. People joke around, but it's true. It's almost like the gateway to Michigan City, like the arch is the gateway to St. Louis. You know, it's right there, and it's going to be more accessible. Now, we're still going to keep the Legacy Hospital open in downtown Michigan City. There will be behavioral health and rehabilitation there, and then we'll look to rent out the space to other organizations in the community that need the space. But that new hospital is going to be great. We are not asked to fundraise for any bricks and mortar, as we call it, you know, any capital to build the hospital as well, which was nice. But what we are doing, we have a healing garden, a new chapel, a walking trail that we're going to put in behind the hospital in the woods, the wetlands back there. It's going to be great. And there are fundraising and donor recognition opportunities, naming rights as well, with those options.
So it's really more about helping than building.
More about mission. Yeah. To answer your question, you're right. St. Clair Clinic, the Macaulay Clinic, which is in Hammond, and those two clinics do. They help the working poor, as we call it. Maybe you fall in this category where you are working, but you still can't afford that health insurance. Guess what? At Franciscan, it's our mission. You don't have to have insurance to be seen. You know, some hospitals in the country, for-profits, will turn people away if they won't be reimbursed. We don't worry about that. Our mission, first and foremost, is you take care of every single person who comes through your doors. You worry about that later. And I'll tell you what we did in 2016, Mark. In 2017, the numbers are still being gathered here and finalized. But in 2016, across the entire Franciscan Health System in Indiana and also extends into South Suburban Chicago, we paid $500 million in charity care. And that really speaks to our mission. And that is the reason why I feel honored and blessed to be part of this organization, because, again, it's not about the money. It's about taking care of the patient and the person first, and $500 million in charity care. That's a huge chunk of money right there.
Huge number.
Yeah. Amazing. I had to read that a few times, like 500,000. No, 500 million with an M. Amazing.
Yeah, that's great. So for someone to take advantage of something like that, they literally just go to a normal appointment, and they just kind of have to deal with it on the back end, like you said.
Exactly right. Yeah. They come see us first, and we'll worry about either putting them on a payment plan, because everybody falls in different financial categories and what you can do. But we don't want to make it a burden. You know, healthcare, let's be honest, we all know it's expensive enough, so we don't want it to be a burden for somebody. We want to make sure we give them, they know they can have access to that care, they can get the cancer treatment they need, they can get the prenatal treatment that they need for mothers, they can deliver their baby in a safe, nurturing, compassionate environment. That's a big part of it too, Mark. It's not just, the access to healthcare, which is huge, obviously, but when you come to us, you better get compassionate care too, right? You should expect compassionate care, and our team delivers on compassionate care as well.
Right. The people that are giving the care don't know what the financial circumstance is anyway, so.
Exactly. Yeah. Doesn't matter if it's that millionaire or billionaire, or if it's somebody who is struggling and living paycheck to paycheck, that doesn't matter at all. Everybody's treated equally and should be everywhere.
Yeah. So, I mean, it seems like you're kind of the liaison between the hospital and the people that are giving or want to give. So what is the typical donor, or is there a typical donor?
That's a great question. You know, I could tell you that there are different, there are a variety of options. Obviously, we talk about all the funds, and we don't have an interest of time to name all the funds that we have, the patient necessities, cancer, cardiac, you name it. Bottom line is, whatever you want to do, we make happen. And I love how you said liaison, because I always learned from going to different philanthropic conferences and learning, and I love to read and learn every day, because I think none of us, no matter what profession we're in, can know too much, right? We can always learn more. And as soon as you think, hey, this is as good as we're going to get, and you plateau, guess what? Somebody is better and passes you. But I always like the word, too, like liaison. I love that word. And a bridge, because here's a donor. Think about a donor driving down the road, if you will. They say, these are my philanthropic needs. We're the bridge and the foundation to lead them, over the bridge, over the water, right? To go take the bridge over the water to get to the results that they want. And that's a great way to say it, Mark, where, tell us what you need to do and let me help connect you with ways you can make that difference. And also the people, you want to learn more about. For example, somebody wants to make a difference in oncology. I'm not the expert in oncology, right? But I know what we have to offer. So I will connect them to our leaders of oncology that can talk to that donor and say, listen, this is what we have to offer. And maybe, like the very generous Burrell family did in Crown Point, they started the Burrell Cancer Center at our Franciscan Health Crown Point facility because they said, we had a family member who was treated at your facility for cancer. He received good care, but it just seemed like the environment could be a little better, you know? And so they made that happen for us. And guess what? They have helped us raise our cancer care to a new level. And philanthropy did that. And that's why I say the right way too, again, Mark. It's not about money. It's about relationships and helping people make a difference. And when you look at it that way and you do it that way, I think philanthropy is very powerful. It's life-changing. It's transformational. It's impactful. I love those words, transformational, impact. And that's what I try to talk to people about, you know, help me help you learn more about what we do there. And then hopefully you can help us make a difference if you like what you hear and you like the options.
And I think that's part of for any philanthropy or sometimes people don't know what to do. They want to get involved. They want to give back to something, but they don't know where to start or how to get involved or do I need to donate $1 million to be involved? I think that's just an education process.
It absolutely is. And even internally with our staff and our employees and our physicians and nurses, we let them know, for example, the clinical staff, you know, with the Patient Necessities Fund, some don't know that, hey, we have funds available to help the patients they take care of every day. So it's a team, right? It's not just when you see the foundation coming, we're going to ask you for money. That's not it at all. We're a team. We're going to help you with your needs. And that goes for the donors, obviously, externally, you know, the donors and our patients, and also internally with our employees and physicians and nurses. Hey, what do you need for your patients? Let us tell you as a foundation, philanthropically, what we can do. And also, obviously, if you consider helping us, have ownership. You know, we have an annual employee campaign every year where employees can designate their gift to, again, like we said, whatever they want. Right. So we started a new nursing fund recently that can help with nursing education. The nurses can give to that fund. And like you said, does that have to be $1 million? No, anybody could be a philanthropist. You can payroll deduct anything you want, at least a minimum of $5 per pay. And I always found, too, that when you payroll deduct, right, that's money you're not counting on, so you're not missing that money. And then you're philanthropically helping to make a difference. And then you have ownership in whatever fund, whatever purpose you want to help make a difference for.
Yeah, and for the employees, they can see that inside thing where they might think there's a bigger need in that area, so they can pigeonhole that money for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you mentioned, going back to your other question very quickly, you mentioned what's a typical donor. You know, the great thing is at Franciscan is we don't really have a typical donor because there's so many different options. But really, I could say, if I had to say a typical donor is, we have so many people who just care about our mission. No matter what it is, whether it's St. Clair, Macaulay, I'm holding a document called our 2017 Impact Report, and it tells you what we send this to our donors and tells them the impact that their dollars make. And that's another important thing, too. How many times have maybe you or I even given money to our church or a different nonprofit? And sometimes you wonder what happened with that money. Well, it's our job to be good stewards of that money, to also report back and tell them this is the difference that you made. For example, you know, we had total support to our mission programs in 2017, $1.6 million. And that's incredible. So $1.6 million to just our, not now as a foundation, we generated $2.3 million, but $1.6 went to a variety of mission programs we have, like patient assistance, St. Clair Clinic, Macaulay Clinic, St. Francis Center at Dyer, which I learned about this a few months ago. It helps troubled teens in the area. It's a place for them to stay. And we help educate them. We teach them so they get their schooling education while they stay with us. They're in a safe, secure environment. And we help reintroduce them, if you will, to the community and to their family once they get maybe the help they need because they got into drugs, maybe started hanging around the wrong people, and just started getting into some help. And so their family members reach out to us and say, can you help guide them on the right path to reintroduce them to the community? And I'll tell you, if that's not life-changing or impactful, I don't know what else is.
Yeah. And that's, you know, and maybe you don't know that those things are available if you're not, you know, in looking for them or in need of them. But that's another thing, too, is making people aware of all the programs. Because I'm sure there's, you know, programs out there that no one thinks of that you guys are probably doing and helping. So
that's a great point. And that goes back to why I said we would never just ask for money. I'll never just meet somebody and say, will you give us money? I mean, when is that? That's like cold calling, or, you know, it's like we all get those phone calls during dinner time. I don't know why they're always during dinner time, right? They mispronounce your name, Mr. Pelper. Well, right there, you don't know who I am. You're mispronouncing my name and you're calling me during dinner, and then you want to try to ask me to support your cause. That's cold calling. That's fundraising done the wrong way. We build relationships, like you said, and find out what do you care about and what difference do you want to make, and let them know. In relationship building, Mark, a great part of it, you said a few times, is education. If they don't know what difference they can make yet, what we have to offer, then why would they even consider, you know, giving to us? And I'll tell you, as I learned about philanthropy over the past, 8 years now I've been doing it, you know, it's not just about, like you said earlier, anybody can be a philanthropist. Don't have to be that millionaire, right? Anybody can do it. And I hate when people say, too, well, they have a lot of money. They should give to us. they should get to why. Okay, help me understand why they nobody should do anything.
Right.
You have to build those relationships to find out if there is a possibility for them to make a donation, a gift to our mission, because people get asked to do a lot of things. You and I both know there are a lot of very impactful nonprofits out there in missions, but as you get to know people and let them know what we do, and it starts with education, like you said, that's how we build donors and build those relationships.
And it goes back to what you said at the beginning about the relationship. If the donor is not getting anything out of it, why should they?
Exactly right. Yeah. Exactly right. If they feel like they're, you know, I've been giving you money for a long time and I don't see the impact, I don't know what I'm doing, why would we expect them to continue? We don't. And that's why it's important to have that communication. Hey, you know what? You gave us $5,000 and this is the impact that you made. You helped us serve this many patients, you helped us, and then you delve down a little deeper, right? You dive deeper, where you helped us serve this many patients, and this is what you did. You helped us provide, you know, maybe for like, say, it's at St. Francis Center, you helped us educate, you know, 20 children, 20 adolescents this past year. And this is, and then they were reintroduced to their families. And that's what we want to do too, is help get people on the right path, right? Maybe drug addiction, for example. We're starting a new program called the Grace Project to help addicted mothers and their innocent children. And marketing came up with that, and I love that, innocent children, because the children marketing these situations, they don't ask to be, they're born addicted to opioids. I mean, talk about a sad situation, but we don't judge the mother for that, because the mothers, most of the time, they didn't ask to be addicted to drugs, and it's not, and don't stereotype and don't judge and say, oh, why should I help somebody who's addicted to drugs, you know, a druggie or something like that. You know, people will say things like that or label them those names. Well, guess what? Anybody can get addicted to opioids. It could be you or I who maybe have I told you before this, you had a dental procedure a couple weeks ago. Maybe for the pain medication, we become dependent on that. And guess what? We become addicted. We didn't ask for that, but we have a program to help get the mothers clean, because if they don't get clean, then the child can't go home with their mother, right? They have to be put into child protective services. We don't want that to happen. We want to reunite the family. So if you get the mother clean, you reunite her with her baby.
I think sometimes people overlook the fact that it's cheaper to fix the initial problem and keep putting Band-Aids on it and social services and all that other stuff. That just costs money.
It does. Now, thank God they're here, though, right?
Yeah.
I'm not downplaying what they do.
Yeah.
Please know that.
Yeah.
But the sad part is, and what I've also learned, too, in Indiana, that majority of time that a child enters the child protective services or those facilities, unfortunately, the majority of time, I don't know the actual percentage or statistics, but it's pretty high, they are not reunited with their parents. And so hopefully it's an opioid crisis across the country, right? But we're trying. We know we can't fix it, like you said, with a Band-Aid overnight, but we're trying to do our part to help our portion of the country here in northwestern Indiana.
So you said earlier, journalism background. So what have you been able to skill set? Have you been able to transfer from the journalism over to the philanthropy side?
That's a great question, because it takes me back to when I finally got a little burnout, if you will, in broadcast journalism. I told you, also talking to my, wife now, but girlfriend and fiance at the time, we started talking about getting married and starting a family. And I would look around the newsroom. And hey, to each their own, right? This, for some people, they've done this their whole career and they make it happen. But to me, I sat there and I'm looking around, and, after the 6 o'clock news, and newscasts have really grown, right? When I first broke into it, you mostly had your 6. And if you're on Central Time, you had your 10. If you're on Eastern Time, you had your 11 o'clock. Well, then they started adding 4 o'clock and 5 o'clock. And then 6 to 6:30 turned to 6 to 7, right? And I was a Fox day. I worked at a Fox affiliate in Evansville. So we were on, being on Central Time as we are here as well. 9 o'clock was, and then 10 o'clock for the newscast, not 10 and 11 in Eastern Time. So between 7 o'clock and 9, guess what happened? There were basketball games or football games or sporting events. And we would have to get done with the early show, go out and videotape your own sports events, because we're a smaller market. Come back, grab a write it, put it together. It was nonstop. Now, it was good adrenaline, and I didn't mind that. But my point was, we weren't going home to have dinner with our families. We were working throughout the whole night. And sometimes you don't get home until after midnight, and then you start, you get home late. My wife worked a normal job. So a lot of times I'd come home, she'd be in bed, and I would see her in the morning a little bit, but I would sleep in a little more than after she left for work, because I didn't have to start till 1 or 2. So my point is, it just wasn't the right schedule for families, and that's when I started realizing, it's time for a change. But going back to what you said about skill set, I felt really guilty, because I was very lucky. My parents are great people. They paid for my education. They paid for my sister's education. I went to University of Michigan for undergrad, and I went to Syracuse, as I said, and They didn't ask for any money. They provide, and I want to do, my wife and I want to do that same for our two. We have two little girls at home, 5 year old and 11 month old, who's getting ready to turn one on March 3rd. So we have our hands full with two little ones here. But I want to be able to do the same for them. And so I felt guilty. I thought, you know, wow, I went to school for broadcast journalism. I learned all these skill sets to be a sportscaster. But my dad, I'll never forget this, he said, "Do you think Syracuse only prepared you to be a sportscaster? You're wrong. It prepared you for life." And he's right. And so when I took a step back, I realized that, well, what can I transfer? Well, obviously communications. You got to be a people person to do what I do. You know, you can't be an introvert. You got to be an extrovert, and I'm very extroverted. I love meeting people because that's what it's all about—the relationships. You meet people, you find out what they care about. So really, the communication, the people skills transferred from sportscasting to PR for 2 years, and then took me to the foundation because it's all about communication. It's all about people. It's all about, again, that term, but I cannot stress it enough: relationship building.
Yeah, and I think that probably is not taught in school like it should be. Like, because I think it's important. It doesn't matter what you're doing. If you don't know how to have a relationship with a person, then, you know, there's no moving forward.
I cannot agree with you more, Mark. It's no matter what we do, right? In our business, it's about relationships. And some people, unfortunately, don't know how to do that or just aren't very good at it. And I feel bad for those people. I do, because I'm not saying I'm perfect. Please, not that. I'm not. None of us are perfect at everything. But what I mean is I'm not afraid to talk to anybody and to build those relationships and approach somebody to find out more about them, to see if we can form a partnership with Franciscan, and more importantly, just get to know them and find out what makes them tick. I love learning about people. That's the best part about my job, is learning about people and finding out what they care about. Now, obviously, if you can make that fit and, you know, make that match, that they can make a philanthropic difference on our mission when they agree to make that gift, that's the best feeling in the world. Because I know I can see the big picture. And maybe they don't see it yet, but they will, obviously. I know the difference they're going to make. You know, my team and I can see, wow, they're giving this money to help, you know, our you know, cancer patients in need. It's incredible.
And the relationship building today might not lead to a donation tomorrow, but who knows down the road?
Exactly right. And that's the best part about it. You know, we talked about earlier, I said, you know, people say, oh, I can't ask for money. They get nervous doing it because, you know why? Because it's the fear of rejection. And it's okay. I said, what's the worst that's going to happen? They're not going to bite your head off. They're just going to tell you no. And like you said, and maybe the no is, you know, I support, you know, several different nonprofits and different causes, and it's just not right for me to do this. But like you said, no today doesn't mean no tomorrow or a year from now. It's got to be the right time. So what do we do when somebody says no? Do we end that? Okay, don't ever talk to me again. Do we end that relationship? No, you're still, it's okay. Because guess what? They're great people, and they care about the community. It's just now is maybe not the right time for them to help Franciscan, but a year or two from now could be. So you definitely have to maintain those relationships. Absolutely.
Definitely. So you mentioned a little bit ago, loving to learn. And I always ask people, so anything that you've read, listened to, or a seminar that you've gone to recently that's given you a big aha moment on something that you wanted to change in how you were approaching something?
You know, it really was, it started early. I go every year, and I have gone every year, and we'll see if I go this year, because I've gone several years now. I've had the opportunity to go to the philanthropy conference in Madison, Wisconsin, at the Christie University, and what a beautiful area that is. If you've never been to Madison, you know, it's funny, being a sports fan of me, right? I thought, wow, I never really liked the Wisconsin Badgers, you know? Those crazy Badgers, but I'll tell you what, no, I'm rooting for Wisconsin now, because just I love the, I just have appreciation for the area. But what I have learned there is everything I told you, is the relationship side of things. And that's the aha moment where, because, you know, nowadays there are classes for philanthropy and people can take that and maybe get a degree in different things in philanthropy. And I wanted to be a sportscaster. Yeah, I wanted to be, I thought my goal is to be, and I believe in dreaming big. My parents have always said, my sister and I, you got to dream big, right? My dream was to work at ESPN. Yeah, be the next ESPN sportscaster, the next Bob Costas, who is an alum of Syracuse. You know, you see his picture on the wall there. They have a wall of fame, they call it, at Syracuse. And obviously, every young freshman that comes in, you know, I come in a freshman, I'm like, wow, yeah, look at this wall. And how can I get my picture on this wall? Right. Now, that didn't happen. That's okay. It wasn't my path. But guess what? I gave it a good shot, and it led me to where I am today. And now I feel like I'm doing the most fulfilling thing in the world is being, you know, doing my small little part to help change lives. But going back to what you said, the philanthropic conference in Madison, really, I'll never forget from day one, first time I was there, right? Because, you know, it was a fundraiser starting out. You do think it's about the money. I gotta get to know all the rich people. That's what I gotta do. And I was so wrong. Whenever the first day our lecturer, if you will, stood up and he said, if you're chasing money, and I hate to even use that term, but he's trying to say is that's what the mindset, a lot of young fundraisers come in, they think they're chasing money, right? He said, if you're chasing money, you're in it for the wrong reason. you have to build relationships. And he said that from day one, and that really just, a light bulb went off, like you said, and I've been building relationships and focused on that from day one. I came back and I talked to our board and I said, yeah, I think we're focused on the wrong approach and this is how we need to do it. And I cannot tell you the success that we've seen, I saw in Evansville when we did that, we made that change, and I'm trying to bring the same philosophy here to this region. It starts with the donors, it's donor-centric, and the good news is our foundation here, when I join them, they know that. They understand the importance. It wasn't like I had to reteach anything. They were doing things the right way. Now it's our job to even try to build stronger relationships. But that's really what it was. And there's also a professional fundraiser who writes a weekly column. I get it every Friday. I got it this morning before I came here, Gail Perry. And she really breaks it down, too, about the importance of relationship building.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's she's good amazing. To hear.
Yeah, it yeah. is.
So outside business, you said a 5 and a almost 1-year-old. Anything specific that you do outside of work?
Chase them around the house there and try to keep them happy. Yeah. You know, now, of course, with the snow, we're mostly indoors. But the 5-year-old, who's almost 6, by the way, she'll be 6 in April, she loves playing outside. And it's funny, you know, we call her the boss of the family, of course, because the almost 1-year-old is starting to talk a little bit. By the way, she said dad before mama, so my wife is probably driving her crazy
that
about that.
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But our 5-year-old Aubrey said mama before dad, but Ava said dad first. But anyway, we were driving one day about 2 months ago, and at first I kind of getting cold, really cold, right? And she says from the back seat or car seat, I called her a throne because she's the queen, right? She said, hey, daddy. I said, yes, Aubrey, yes, yes, boss. She said, I think we made the wrong decision moving up here. I said, why is that? And she said, it's too cold. And then she started, as she starts playing the snow more, then just 2 weeks ago, she said, we were outside playing. She goes, daddy, never mind what I said. I love playing the snow. I love seeing all the snow because Evansville just didn't get the snow. But and my wife and I, we love spending time with our children. And of course, sports fan in me, love watching Syracuse basketball, love watching the Steelers and the Penguins. I'll tell you my true love. A lot of Pittsburghers, Steelers are first in their heart. Penguins are first in mine. I love hockey. Love hockey. And I'll tell you, and that's why I love being in this area, because I love what the Blackhawks do. Right now, they're struggling right now and everything, but I went to that opening game. I don't know if you remember that. The Blackhawks beat the Penguins 10-1. They just took it to us, but I'll tell you, it was so cool being there.
It was the highlight of Blackhawks season, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's funny because I did say to some, now, there are very smart hockey fans here, and they are so nice, and they were joking. I had my Crosby jersey on, Sidney Crosby. They were teasing me and giving it to me, like, in good fun. But, of course, there's always one or two, right, no matter where you go. And there was, unfortunately, walking out, there's a woman who maybe had a little too much to drink and was really giving it to me. And I just politely said to her, I said, man, well, we'll see where the, you know, how the teams end at the end of the season, you know, and everything. And, you know, but she was giving it to me, but it's funny. It was all in good fun, though.
Yeah.
Sports
has some people go way overboard, but the sportsmanship of it all amazes me. And I think hockey does it better than most sports.
I agree with you. Yeah. It's amazing. You look at the Stanley Cup playoffs and afterwards, right? Especially if it goes to best of 7, right? You play a 7-game series, and these two teams just beat the heck out of each other, right, for 7 games. But then they line up and they shake hands. And what do they say? And then old friends, enemies on the ice become friends, and they say good luck in the next round and everything like that. Right. And it is amazing. You're right. Hockey does it right. And I think you look at role models these days, too. The hockey world has some great role models. You just don't know. Again, nobody's perfect, right? But you just don't hear about the trouble that maybe, especially the NFL, these players these days in the NFL, I wouldn't let my young daughters wear any jerseys. And I'm talking about some of my beloved Pittsburgh Steelers, too. They just don't act the way they should act off the field. But the hockey players, for the most part, they get it right.
Yeah, very good. So anything that we didn't talk about that you want to bring up or talk about?
You know, I think you asked a lot of great questions. I cannot thank you enough for this opportunity. I hope you can tell, and people listening and watching can tell, that, you know, I'm very passionate about what I do. And I brought the same passion to broadcasting when I was doing that, and also PR. And I learned that from my parents. You know, my dad always said, I don't care what you do, whether you're running your company, whether you're working, you know, you're a CEO of a company, or whatever your role is in your job and your profession, you bring your best effort every day. You don't just mail it in someday, and you don't quit. You see things to the end. And I owe everything really to them. My sister and I, as I said, they paid for our education because they believed in getting us ready for this. And they, and more importantly than that, they raised us well and taught us how to be the best we can be each and every day, and treat people with respect. And, you know, it's a crazy world out there, as you and I both know, and you hear all about these terrible things happening across the country. And I just try to be the best I can be at my job every day and raise my family and keep them safe.
Yeah. Great. Thank you. So if someone wants to learn more, where do they find you? Where do they reach out to you?
Yes, it's not, I don't know, you know, as you can probably imagine, I'm not hard to find. I should not be hard to find. Please call the Franciscan Foundation. Call me directly, 219-661-3402. And I give you my email address, but it's a little longer. But again, call me Rick, but my email address is richard.peltier. That's P-E-L-T-I-E-R at franciscanalliance.org. It's a longer one, but please call anytime, honestly, 219-661-3402. Call the main foundation, look us up online, get the number. You call, I promise you, I'll talk to you, and hopefully we can build a relationship and find ways that if you want to make a difference, you give me a call and I'll help you make that difference.
Very good. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for the opportunity, Mark. I appreciate it. Great. It's been a lot of fun.